Welcome to the Fireside Chat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Paul Spohr and Nick Pollock.
We've got to do a Fireside Chat. So Spohr, would you like to take it away?
Let's crank up the fire, Nick, because like I said, I'm freezing, but it is great to talk to you. This is kind of our return after an off season here. And so what better way to get by the fire than to talk about some dudes? Let's talk some dudes. And let's talk last year's breakouts.
Yes.
Because they're always an interesting player pool. And what do you do for the follow-up? How do you treat them? The prices go way up. You know, some guys go up higher than others, but the prices always go up. And you have to determine, is this somebody I can buy in on? Is this somebody we should fade? So we're going to go through eight of the bigger breakouts from last year and determine where we're at right now. Give some reasons why. Some of them have new teams. Actually, just one of them has a new team. And it's a team downgrade, if I can just be honest about it. But we'll get to him momentarily. Let me see what I sent you. Okay, yeah. Actually, we're starting with him. We're starting.
Yeah, we
with
are.
Him.
Absolutely.
So let's dive right in with Mr. Yusei Kikuchi.
Yeah.
Now, it was an interesting kind of a tale of two seasons, of a phrase we like to use in baseball when a guy has like a bad first half, second half type situation. It wasn't direct halves. But because he was traded from Toronto to Houston at the deadline, you see those two clear cuts there. And his time with Toronto was underwhelming because of the home runs, 4.75 ERA, but a 3.51 Sierra, 3.66 FIP, right? There were underlying skills that said, hey, this guy's good, but he's teased and tantalized before.
Right.
Well, he goes to Houston, and they figured it out. The thing that Kikuchi believers have been saying for the last few years, this guy has talent, this guy can be a stud. They figured it out. Now, they didn't curb all the homers. He still had a 1-2 homer nine, but his strikeout to walk rate went up from 20 to 26, and they completely altered his arsenal. They dove into the slider and said, put that changeup and curveball a little bit off to the side. He still threw them a bit. They're more like show me pitches, 8-10% range, but it was really fastball slider and things took off. 2.70 ERA, 2.87 Sierra, 3.07 FIP, whatever ERA indicator you like, it was good. 0.93 whip. I love the crackling of that fire, by the way. Things were excellent. So you're going to buy in next year, right? Well, he's going to the Angels. And you know, there's a running joke on the sleeper in the bus that Justin likes to make fun of me for my obsession with Angels pitchers, because it's bad. I shouldn't be liking so many of them because they're a terrible organization. But I do end up liking a bunch of their pitchers. I'm a bit nervous on Kikuchi, though. What happens now that he moves from Houston to the Angels? Can he keep those gains? When a player makes such a distinct change with a team and then goes to a new team, how does that play out for you? What do you think of Kikuchi in 25?
Oh, that's so difficult. So I initially, back in October, was the guy that was like, Yusei Kikuchi, I'm going to have him around like 45, 50 or so. Probably this crew of, say, Robbie Ray, Solis Heal, these exciting, maybe Ryan Pepio. I would say like cherry bomb types that I feel like I'm not necessarily going to drop through the year. They have good strikeout numbers. They're going to have some highs, going to have some lows, but generally overall, we like them. And as I've been formulating what those groups actually are with more of a scrutiny entering my top 400 that I'm putting out in a couple of weeks in February. Oh my gosh, it is February. I'm saying in February. It is February.
Today,
later this
February
month.
We made
How time you trek forward. Oh God, it's the worst. All right. Anyway, Yusei Kikuchi, I'm realizing, is not a fun guy to roster on your fantasy teams.
I agree.
He is not someone that you just sit back and say, I know that this is going to be fine. And especially inside of the Los Angeles Angels team, I have even more worry that Kikuchi is going to find a plateau and just stay there. Second half of last year, it was fastball slider from Kikuchi. The four-seamer is this very flat pitch that he should be going upstairs with constantly. He has 7 feet of extension, 95, 96. I love this. Even 16 inches of vert. Like, you're not supposed to have that much vert when it's that flat and he gets it. I mean, 97th percentile flatness, essentially, on this, which is good for an attack angle for Yusei Kikuchi. But does he go upstairs enough? He's actually been better at landing that in the zone instead of being chaotic with it. Not really amazing at getting it upstairs, but still not as low as it has been in earlier seasons, which is good. which means he needs a slider to actually be there. And it was in the second half of the year, but it took him so long. You say Kikuchi went with this changeup for ages and then the curveball in there and didn't have the slider and then finally came back for a bit and great. But I don't have any faith that it's just going to be there on day one.
Right.
I don't have faith that's going to be there a month later when he has it. And I'm realizing that the thing that is most valuable for this year are having guys that I feel confident in. And I know that sounds wild, but there are so many good pitchers that I feel as if I don't need to take the chance on someone like Kikuchi because I have other pitchers where I feel more confident that if they hit, they hit. Gavin Williams, to me, I have more confidence in my
big
draft.
Gav fan myself.
Might seem crazy and wild because he's been not really that consistent and good, but it was a lost year in 2024 for Gavin Williams. And I think that I'll get a better understanding of what he is out of the gate with the same type of ceiling that Yusei Kikuchi has.
And isn't Kikuchi just one of those guys that if you draft and it goes south, you go, I knew this was coming. You throw up your hands right away and you say, I knew this was coming. Why did I draft him? So don't even put yourself through the potential turmoil.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't do it. You mentioned that you were maybe going to have him around 40, 45 coming into the year before the Angels move. That is where the draft market has him. He's the 44th pitcher off the board, and you're just not going to find me paying that price for Kikuchi as an Angel. Now, it's a hypothetical, so it doesn't really matter, but I am curious. If he was still with Houston, would you be sticking there? Like, was it just the move to the Angels that pushed you off, or was there anything beyond that, like that if he was with Houston, that you'd still be pushing the brakes?
So I would be more encouraged. I think going to the Angels really was the tiebreaker, thinking the Angels are not a team that are good at making the tweaks and adjustments in season. It's just what we've seen. And the Astros are generally good at it. What's kind of funny is that the first start with Houston, Kikuchi was better. And everyone says, Houston fixed them. No. They actually told him to throw the changeup and he had to change the feel for the first game and then it was gone right after. And they go, uh-oh. And he went back to what he was doing with at the end of Toronto, which was slider focus.
Slider heavy, yeah.
And I wouldn't say that Houston necessarily did that. But I do have more faith that Houston can find and make adjustments than the Angels, who just haven't done that. I mean, they literally fired the two coaches that made the adjustments for Reed Detmers in the middle of 2023. So I don't love it. I think it's just going to be chaotic. Also, the win proposition, much better
right.
for Houston
right.
than it is in LA.
It comes way down with the Angels for Kikuchi. So I just would be careful, folks. I just don't really see the upside here. Reminds me of another lefty they got coming off of a big year when they got Tyler Anderson, right? There were some real believable things that he had done with the Dodgers. And I remember Justin and I were making jokes about how, like, if things go south, he can just drive over to Mark Pryor and get some training with him real quick since they'll be close being in Anaheim and LA. But obviously things didn't go so well with Tyler Anderson, at least that first year. He was a bit better last year, but still we haven't seen that guy that we saw with the Dodgers. And I think it's going to be similar for Kikuchi, where we're not going to see the sustaining of the breakout season. So he's absolutely a big fade for me for sure. This next guy, I don't think he could do anything to make me fade him. I've been in the bag for this guy since his prospect days with Washington, and it is Reynaldo Lopez. And in fact, my undying love for him was why I still had shares last year when there really wasn't a great reason necessarily to dive in. He was coming off of a relief season, but as a late round draft pick, opportunity at potentially starting, and he popped off. 136 innings with a 1.99 ERA, 1.11 WHIP, quality skills, but also some really positive luck factors. And when we say luck, we don't necessarily mean that, like, he didn't do anything to earn it or there was no changes there. Just the sustainability of it is tough. And I'm specifically focused on a career best 87% left on base rate. He basically brought a reliever's left on base rate to a starting role. And that's just really, really hard to emulate. He also had an 8% homer to fly ball rate, which we've seen him dip down below 10% before, but that's still really good for somebody that transitioned back to the rotation. And I just don't know that you can fully believe in either of those. That said, I don't need another 1.99 ERA. We've got Reynaldo Lopez after going at pick 407 last year. He's up to 166 this year. What can Reylo do at age 31 for an encore after his big breakthrough season?
You know, what's actually really interesting, something I didn't notice before about Reynaldo Lopez, is that he's really good at not allowing home runs. I can't explain it fully, but yeah, in general...
He had the one struggle in 2020, which no one counts as anything. Like, who cares?
Yeah, but as a reliever, in last year, too, just a few home runs allowed.
Yeah.
0.14. Yeah, so one home run, I assume, in... 2022, then in 2023 it was about a one, and then 2024 0.66. That left on base rate, part of that hotel, Holy Trinity equating luck. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 9% home run fly ball rate last year, 288 BABIP, which is actually even, because here's the problem with Raylo: four seamer gets really hit against lefties, and his slider isn't a 60% strike rate. And that's Reynaldo Lopez. I mean, that's essentially what he does. It's kind of wild to me that you have a pitcher with this amount of success and also a sub 8% walk rate when your main number two pitch against both lefties and righties has a sub 60% strike rate. It was a 54% against left-handers, and the slider was a 42% usage with 59% strikes against right-handers. Now, he threw a ton of four-seamers, 78% strike rate also is incredible, but he doesn't get whiffs on it. It's a sub 10% whiff rate four-seamer. And not to say that, like, there are a lot of times we talk about, say, Shota Imanaga that has, oh man, this isn't a sub 10%. Sorry, this isn't a like a big whiff pitch four-seamer, but it has these attributes. It gets a lot of outs, and he has a splitter to come off of it that's just so filthy and so consistent. The sweeper against lefties, and we get it. That doesn't get whiffs, but it gets all these outs. Yeah, I wouldn't say for Raylo it's the same. It's a fastball at 95 without, you know, it's an average attack angle, average extension, about average IVB, maybe slightly higher, but like, it's not, to me, an exceptional fastball. It actually has a sub 5 PLV, 584 against lefties. Like, that's not great. It's just so strange to me that this worked. And when I see that,
and
when I
so
see a
well
guy,
too, like, didn't just work, God, was amazing.
Yeah. 199 ERA.
Yeah. What?
It's Spore, have you seen a less heralded 199 ERA, sub 2 ERA over 130
on a good innings? Team, too. I know they underwhelmed because of all their injuries, but like, this wasn't on, you know, some 2-bit team that no one pays attention to. It's not any freaking Atlanta Braves, for crying out loud. And he barely got talked about.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. I'm not saying that I think that Raylo is going to hurt you, though. And I don't think he's going to be a 27% strikeout rate again. His put away rates were absurdly good, 28%. On the slider, which is well above average, just to get an idea here, that's 93rd percentile. The average for a slider put away rate is 19%. So that's efficiency. That's how you cut out those walks.
Yep.
That when you get to the two strikes, you get the out, essentially. And then against right-handers, it was the same thing, 28% put away rate, right? So there's your reason for him limiting the walks and getting those strikeouts. I don't think that slider is going to be that efficient. You rarely see that high of a put away rate. Normally for the elite guys, it's like 25%, 24%. For the super absurd ones, it's 30%. We're talking like Glasnow's curveball or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you should not expect this kind of efficiency with Raylo's slider in 2025. And I think when that goes away, then you have problems, because that means that batters are seeing more fastballs that they can hit. The curveball, I don't think, is a real nullifier against lefties. It is more consistent than the slider with a 60% strike rate, but it's not this, oh my gosh, what a curveball, right? He was really good at dotting it down in a way, but it's not
enough. He hasn't leaned on it for quite some time. 12% last year was his highest since 2017 for Reynaldo Lopez with the usage. Do you think there's a world, though, that if the slider effectiveness does dip a little, would he maybe dial up the curveball usage as a way to compensate?
Yeah, he only uses the curveball against left-handers. So Raylo has a 90% usage against lefties, 0% against righties. And you might see that curveball show up against right-handers if the slider's worse. But it was a 54% strike rate against left-handers last year anyway for that slider. Long story short here, to me, it's just, I think he's going to be helpful. He's still going to be an Atlanta and going to be relied upon. But I'm not going to go after him in my top 50. Because I just don't think it's going to be that demonstrably amazing. And I feel you're going to get a fair number of blowups that go, oh man, wow, this is totally different than the 199 ERA and 111 whip from Ronaldo Lopez.
Right. And even as a super fan of his, I'll be tapping the brakes a bit too. I think I have him just inside my top 50, but he's not a premier target the way he was in previous years. Cause now the price is, I think, a fair 161 ADP. Like, that's not terrible. Like you said, he's not going to kill you, but I am planning for some pullback, and I do understand, because I've been on the Reynaldo train long enough to know that the pullback could be severe too. There is a world where it really does collapse. So we do have to be careful there. I am planning for more of like a mid threes ERA, decent whip, decent K rate. And like you said, win probability being on the Braves, but be careful here because there is some potential downside.
Do you think that you'll ever see a two start week?
Oh my goodness, that was the meme of everything last year when he couldn't buy a two-start week to save his life, y'all. And if you want to know the reasons that he lost the two-start week, it's everything under the sun. Injury, rain out, paternity leave. It just everything
Bryce that could Elder. Come up.
Yeah, everything that could come up did. And that's what I thought was so beautiful about his season. And one of these things that's like an intangible thing that he probably got a lot of back pats from the organization from being that flexible, right? We hear about how players are creatures of habit, pitchers especially. You know, some guys say, I have to pitch in this inning all the time or else I'm going to melt down. Not Raylo. Tell me when to go and I'll go. You want me for a two-start right. week? I know you're lying to me. I'm not going to pitch on Sunday. I'll pitch the following Monday or Tuesday. But it was literally 8 weeks in a row that Justin and I documented that he was slated for a two-step and never got it. So maybe this is the year that he gets it, but we'll see. Though, if they move to the six-man like you're advocating for.
Oh, I mean, Atlanta said essentially, Granholms, Ian Anderson, mm-hmm. you think those are our guys.
Yep.
It's possible they extend it more, especially if they add another arm. And they might have even said to Raylo, like, hey, we aren't going to let you go twice in a week because we want to make sure that you're okay going as long as you can. He did have that stop. And by the way, I remember last year, he came back for a start or two. And I said, guys, let's not go for this because there's no way they're going to actually let him go. And then he just didn't have like a 10 strikeout game.
That he just was too good to not put in.
Yeah.
You know, if things are going like, okay, but not great with him, could Raylo be the odd man out when Strider comes back? If they don't go six man, would it be Sale, Schwellenbach, or Sale, Strider, Schwellenbach, Holmes, Anderson? Right? Like, I don't know. No,
I'm not going to throw that juju out there, but you're very much right. It's possible that like it's just not working, and they say, you know what, we're just going to move back to relief because Ian Anderson's working and Grant Holmes is working. You know,
and we know you can succeed there in relief, because he's done it before.
Would you go Grant Holmes over Raylo for your fantasy teams?
At the price, probably.
Not at the price.
Oh, straight up? No, I'm still going to stick with Raylo there.
Okay.
Despite some of the concerns I've outlined, I'm still going to go. I do like Holmes a lot, though. I want to be clear. The realtor, is that what you call him?
Yes, the real estate broker.
He grants homes. Very funny. Yeah. I like that's one of my favorites of yours. But no, I'm a big, big fan. So I want to make sure that is more Raylo love than it is Holmes dislike, because I really, really do like him. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to stick with my boy in that 1v1 there.
Holmes is interesting because it's two secondaries, the curveball on the slider. It's like classic Cleveland even though he's in Atlanta, it's classic Cleveland with two secondaries for whiffs, both sides of the plate, and then a fastball that he commands. And
I think he's being a little bit slept on.
Oh, I agree with you completely.
And I think it's going to change in spring. Yeah. If he's impressing in spring, I think people are really going to vault him up the ranking. So if you do like Grant Holmes and you're an early drafter, get your shares now because they might be pricier in March.
Yeah, once he gets established, it's going to be like last year, it was because they didn't let him go more than 70 pitches at times. So it was four innings and that was it. But I feel like this year, Atlanta should be pushing him properly. So yeah, I'm very much with you. Let's go on to the next guy.
I think Holmes should be a legit starter this year. Let's move on to perhaps the biggest breakout. And I'm always saying that by virtue of the fact that he was second in the Cy Young in the American League. And that is Seth Lugo, who's now moved from a 268 ADP to 183. And I will say the market is tempered pretty nicely here. You look at a season like this, where a guy goes 16 wins, 3 ERA, 109 whip, everything just comes together, in his first big, big full season as a starter. He had 26 starts in 2023, but 33 this past year. Everything came together. This is ripe for a super overpayment. And I will say the market That's not a bad price. That's the 56th starter off the board, and that's pretty fair. Now, everything came together for him. He's a contact, you know, pitch to contact type of guy, and he's on the right team for that because the defense in Kansas City was the best in baseball last year by several different metrics, and Lugo was a prime beneficiary of that. His home run rate came way down too, which is in part due to Kansas City as well. It's actually a pretty good offensive park for everything but home runs. So I don't want you guys to think that, oh, it's just because he went to KC and that's some great pitcher's park. It's an okay pitcher's park, and it stifles homers, but it does elevate other hits, and he was actually better on the road substantially. 3.36 ERA, 1.14 whip at home to 2.62, 1.03 on the road. So the real question here is, where does he go from here? Because 2023 was pretty good too. So now you have two pretty good seasons as a start, or one pretty good one and one elite one. The market is not overreacting. Is this a spot where you can buy back in since the price hasn't shot up? Because I think 5, 6, 7 years ago, this guy's going inside the top 100 after this season. I think that would have been wrong, but I think that's where he'd be going.
You know, what's so interesting, and first of all, I'm just upset at Seth Lugo for making it so that I had to pull out my window so far because he has 8 pitches and just ruins all the tabs. How did you get so quickly that he was the 56th starter off the board? You know, isn't it so confusing with relievers and
yes, starters? I hand make the list.
Oh, you hand made it?
Yeah.
No, Spore, so, I gave you the tool.
I know, but I'd already made mine.
Oh, fine. All right.
Yeah. I make it in October. But yeah, you gave me an actual tool to do it.
Fine. Everyone, by the way,
I don't know why they can't do it for us, by the way. I still haven't gotten a good answer from them.
A shout out to the Pitchers community in our Discord. I requested the ability to quickly filter out relievers from the NFBC ADP. Mm-hmm. And they made something for me. So I made it public to everybody. It's on our Twitter and Blue Sky. Obviously inside the Discord too. But yeah, you can just plug in whatever date range you want. Just export that file to NFBC and plop it in to the tool, and you will get all those pesky relievers. Get out of your class A. Go.
It's so useful. It's just like, come on. You know, I get it why they're all P, because that's what we do at NFBC. They're all pitchers. Yeah. But there should be something on the back end that they could do that for us anyway.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So so the thing about Seth Lugo, what's so interesting to me is we talk about, he has 8 pitches. Oh my gosh, all of these things. But really, it's just to get to his curveball. Like, mm-hmm. The curveball is the pitch that's really good, and everything else is just like, you know, he throws it about 25 to 30% of the time against both lefties and righties. And what's interesting, this actually reminds me of Charlie Morton, of how Charlie Morton's curveball was the thing and still is the thing. And he had his cutter, and he had these the fastballs in there too, and all this other stuff to just get to his curveball again. And that can work. Thing about Morton, though, is that I think he had a better fastball than Seth Lugo. I could be wrong on that one. But it just seems like he squeezed everything that he has out of his arsenal. And it ultimately was a 21 to 22% strikeout rate. Over 206 innings, the most he's ever thrown. 33 games started as well, which also 33. We don't see past 32 much. Okay? So props to Lugo for getting to 33. It's actually from my friend group, All Hail 33. Don't worry about it. It's a thing. 33, when you're that, it's the best age of your life. Anyway, Seth Lugo to me, I'm fine as a Holly, essentially. I don't think he's going to hurt you. I think he's going to be fine. I don't find myself going after this just because I feel we're at the point of our draft that I already have 3 to 4 guys that I trust through the year. And I don't need another foundation of just, hey, this is beneficial. I feel as if it's in your better interest to go and chase the guys who can beat inside of that 1 through 4 and really impact your team and swing the pendulum, as opposed to someone that just kind of keeps you in the running. Like, it's really about your team construction. 15 teamers, I'm more interested because you would need that stabilizer and have them as more of your SP3, SP4. But in a 12 teamer, I don't think that Seth Lugo is going to make a big enough difference to prevent you from chasing your higher impact potential guys, especially with such a deep waiver wire this year. I cannot emphasize that enough. Also, I would just take Nathan Eovaldi later. I'll just say that if you really feel like you need a stabilizer, Nathan Eovaldi and Seth Lugo to me have been like flip-flopping my rankings constantly because like same kind of thing. Good win potential. Player Raider is going to have Seth Lugo higher because he had 16 wins last year. He's not going to get 16 wins this year, guys.
It's just very unlikely to run that back. Yep.
Yeah. So Nathan Eovaldi, Seth Lugo, I think are going to be very similar. And yeah, Seth Lugo to me just doesn't do enough to say like, hey, I deserve this and I'm irreplaceable like others.
Yeah, I think that is totally fair with Lugo. I don't think he's a terrible draft spot because, again, the market's not super overrating him, but it's just not someone where I want to dive in. By the way, I scanned both Blue Sky and Twitter, and I couldn't find the RP Eliminator.
Oh, no.
So if you can pop that link, I was going to pop it in the chat there, but I couldn't quite find it. I didn't know what to search either. I was just doing Control F RP. I didn't know what you said in the tweet to make it easy, but I'll set up the next guy while you look for that. I got no problem taking my L's, but sometimes I got to take my dubs too. So I already bragged on myself about Raylo, and I was big on this guy last year, and it came through nicely too. Luis Gil, what a breakthrough for him. And definitely, I cannot sit here and pretend I saw 152 innings of a 350 ERA and 119 whip coming. No, not at all, with 15 wins and 171 strikeouts. Just took a chance on a guy that I liked coming back from injury late in drafts on a quality team. It really wasn't much deeper than that, and it ended up paying off big. Where do we go from here, though? This guy was an afterthought at the draft table last year, pick 502 in drafts, maybe by the end of draft season, maybe in the mid-400s, but either way, you were never paying a premium. Up to 191 this year. I do think that people are seeing the MLB high 77 walks and tapping the brakes a little bit on the 27-year-old, but coming off a Rookie of the Year season, where do we go from here? Is the control always going to be a problem that kind of creates potential volatility, and then if the hit rate goes up, we're in some real trouble? Or is there a world where Gil can improve the control and really reform himself into somebody that you could bankably rely on for mid to low threes ERAs?
Yeah, Luis Gil. He's another one I go back and forth on. I like him more than Kikuchi. He's kind of in that same bucket, right? And I'm going to keep him into the cherry bomb tier because I feel as if you're going to generally benefit from Gil, and for a few reasons. One, I do believe that his command should improve over time. It's not this ridiculous, like, okay, I don't know where it's going. It's also not precision, but there's generally filling the zone enough. 62% strike rate on the four-seamer, 60% on the slider, and 59% on the changeup. I remember in spring training last year, Luis Gil had a lot more of a focus on that changeup, and it made me very excited because this was really just a fastball slider guy before, and having that changeup is a real nullifier. He destroys right-handers as well, and it's really good to see that his 35% ICR on the four-seamer is beat by the 29% on the slider and 28% on the changeup. So he's not allowing hard contact at all. His mistake rates, this is insane. His mistake rate, which is, if you don't know mistake rate, is essentially saying when he throws a pitch in the zone, how often is it, it has double the chance of being a hit, right? How many pitches actually does Luis Gil throws inside? Ah, I can do this. I can do mistake rate. Rewind, hi, everyone. Rewind. It is a pitch that has double the chance of allowing a hit. Okay, you made a mistake. Okay, whew. Normally you see like 9% as like the average. And not one of Luis Gil's pitches is above a 5% against a right-hander.
Wow.
So these are not pitches that allow hits against right-handers. That is elite. That is phenomenal. And it's why you see that 6.2 hit per nine for Luis Gil. Okay, and that lower BABIP, 238, is a product of that lower ICR rate, that lower mistake rate. All right. It is similar, actually better against lefties with a 3.5% on the four seamer, which is absurdly good. 4.2 on the slider and 3% on the changeup. That's all mistake rate. He doesn't allow mistakes. And yes, that means that he's not, he's outside the zone a little bit more like Blake Snell is. But yeah, that's really good. That said, even though he had a lower mistake rate, guys still hit it. Slider against lefties. Oh my gosh. 51% ICR last year. 45% the four-seamer and 35% with the changeup. So there is refinement to be had with Luis Gil, especially against left-handers, clearly. And that really comes down to changeup being more of a consistent offering. But the skill set of a three-pitch mix of four-seamer, slider, changeup, to me, is the foundational arsenal I look for. Like the old Luis Severino, overpowering four seamer, slider for this way, changeup that way. Like, that's always been a traditional good three pitch mix that I want to see. It's just by getting
so hard not to comp those two, too, right?
Right.
I mean,
oh, completely.
It was just so obvious. Same team, same first name, same skills. So, yeah, I kept making that same comp last year between them.
Exactly. And the 52% strike rate on the changeup to lefties on the changeup. That's it. That's the thing that Luis Seal needs to fix. I think he can. He's certainly gone to that point before. And then really the second part I want to mention, I trust the Yankees and that organization a little bit more than others in the sense of wins and for helping him along the way. There may be a little bit more of the early pull for Luis Gil than in other clubs, say like Cleveland or something along those lines. But I think Luis Gil's in a very good situation to excel in 2025. And it's a good fastball. It's generally flat. It has good vert. It even had a lot more vert early in the year than it disappeared at one point in the year. He has decent enough extensions, 96, 97. This should be helpful for your teams. If I am seeing Luis Gil struggle a lot early on and just not throw strikes, then I might move off of it. That's the big worry here. But I have more faith in Gil getting to a plateau that you like than, say, Yusei Kikuchi.
And again, similar to Lugo, where I'm impressed with the market not overvaluing Gil coming off this big Rookie of the Year campaign. You would normally see a guy like that, especially on the Yankees, right? There's a classic Yankee tax that permeates fantasy baseball. And he's just not overrated, in my opinion. I think the 60th SP off the board is a completely fair price. So you can take that risk and still have a situation where, like you said, if it's going south and you're 5 weeks in, you're into early May and you're like, this is just not going well, you can move on. You can either bench him for a little bit and wait to see, or just flat out cut him, depending on your league depth, too. So there is some risk because of the control, but I think there's just too much upside to ignore Luis Gil. So I'm in with you as well. Let's go on to a guy that, boy, I will never forget this because I didn't know of this horrendous meme until you told me via this player.
No.
This was when I learned about it. Yes. Our next player is Tanner Houck. No. And on a fireside, you called him Tanner Houck Tua, and I looked at you blank-faced, not knowing what on earth you were talking about, blissfully unaware, only to eventually, be beaten over the head.
I didn't.
Yes, no, you were like,
I hate this meme.
Right. And I was like, I don't know what this is, but okay. And obviously I eventually learned that terrible, terrible, wretched meme. But anyway, Tanner Houck Tua, he kind of Houck Tua'd all over people's season at the end of the year.
Paul, please.
No, I'm joking to make you have that reaction, but B, I'm also overstating it a little bit. There were some shaky starts down the stretch, but there were some good ones too. In fact, he closed strong in September. His last few starts were pretty good, but he did have an IL stint in there, and it definitely wasn't as good as the first half. Classic regression or signs of things to come there, because he put up a 2.54 ERA through his first 19 starts and then ended with a 3.12. 3.12 is still very good, but that's a 4.23 in those final 11. Who's the real Houck, and what do we get in the next year here?
Yeah, so last year, Eric Samulski and I, we sat down and we're like, okay, Red Sox, we've got Garrett Whitlock, we've got Tanner Houck. Who do we like more? What's going on? And he said, well, we think that Garrett Whitlock, we have some concerns about the whole pitch mix a little bit, but he has tools for both sides of the plate. If he has the opportunities, this should be good. With Houck, it's just more about, can he find the right weapon against lefties, because it's sinker slider and the splitter hasn't really come along at all, and we don't really know what his solution is going to be. Well, what happens with Tanner Houck? He gets the splitter working in the first half of the season, and it is so good. He is absurdly precise, down away to lefties with a splitter, and Houck is just, oh my gosh, everybody can't stop talking about him. But then guess what splitters do? They go away.
Which is why you don't like them if they are a primary pitch. I always want to be clear on that, because people give you a hard time saying that you don't like them. If they're your third, fourth pitch, okay. But when they're one of your primaries, which was your issue with Frankie Montas, and I think you were proven right as that played out too, and obviously bounced back a little bit last year. But when it's a primary pitch, the in and out nature of it can leave you inconsistent. So that's what happened with Houck in the second half. Are we going to be worried about that, finding that consistency again in 2025?
Well, that's the thing. It can be. And I'm not out on Tanner Houck because I would love to take a chance again. I mean, last year it was a prime scenario of no one being in on him. And in 12 teamers, I was able to get him in leagues. Other people were able to get him in leagues before opening weekend ended. You moved on from other things and got Tanner Houck. And that's the whole purpose of that strategy. I don't know if you can do that this year, which is a little unfortunate because I kind of treat him the same way of just where is he in this? If he is in that rhythm and feel, then we're golden and we roll with this. But I don't think that Tanner Houck is enough with the slider and the sinker, especially against left-handers. Really, those were hit hard, over a 40% ICR in both of those. And also to mention, the feel of the slider got a little bit worse as well in the second half. It wasn't just a splitter going. It's always a sinker and the slider. Those actually fell out of rhythm as well. It's not just like everything else is perfect. So I'm tepid. I want to get us away from the idea that you draft Tanner Houck and then everything is fine and you know what it is through the year. With so many of these pitchers, they could all be really good in April and May. They could all just be out of the gate doing incredibly well and then the full season happens. Or they could just go into that full rhythm for the full year. It's really more about not overpaying for some of those in that glob, right? Just right. Saying, look, I am not going to go after this specific one inside this glob. Or so I'm just recognizing that all of them are like this. Hopefully I get the right one and also be ready to move on if they aren't in that position early. So really designate as you're drafting, who are the ones that I am drafting that I'm like, yes, I know that two bad starts to start the year. I'm sticking with this. Everything's fine, whatever. And who are the ones that I'm not? And getting ready to execute that strategy and being disciplined about it. So I don't know. I mean, Houck right now at his ADP of 222, I think is actually pretty fair. Yeah. That's fine with me. I wonder if there are other guys that I'm okay with going with instead. But yeah, Tanner Houck could be just amazing out of the gate. And that could be really good. Just don't hold on too long.
Another guy who's just not terribly overpriced, though. So again, you know, a pause to the market for not overrating somebody coming off a breakout. I think this is a spot where you can buy in pretty comfortably. And if you do have to pull the ripcord, you know, 5-6 weeks into the season, it's not like you're getting rid of a third, fourth round pick, which I know is a lot tougher, and balancing, you know, sunk cost fallacy with giving a guy a chance to come through it can be difficult. At this price point, 66 pitcher off the board, I have no problem jumping off if things aren't looking good through those first through the first month and a half or so. So and Tanner Houck, again, 395 ADP last year, 222 this year. Go ahead.
And are you going to have to cut a Crawford as well? Let's say the Red Sox, like they're doing a six-man. Let's say they're toying with the idea, right? And Cutter Crawford's in there. Doing the same thing with him?
I am. I think he can fix the home run issue. I mean, maybe I'm foolish on that. It's always been a problem. And when I say fix, I don't even necessarily mean put up like some great, even league average home run rate. But 1.7 last year was a nightmare. Mm-hmm. Frankly, to put up a 4.36 ERA with a 1.7 homer is kind of a feat. Because you should usually be north of 5, north of 6 with your ERA if you're giving up homers at that clip. So there is actually something positive to be said in a weird way that he still had a 4.36 ERA. But yeah, that's just really, really volatile. And a home run machine like that, that's bludgeoning you with terrible starts. So I am still interested, but I'm not going to overstock on him. Like I'm somebody who, you know, I'm a multi-leaguer, so I will get multiple shares of guys. Crawford's probably somebody I won't, though. I'll probably just get the token share just in case he comes through because I do like the core skills. The strikeout walk ratio is really good. He's got good swing and miss. But until we see some semblance of really figuring out the homers where he can be more like a 1.0, 1.1 as opposed to the 1.5 for his career, it is going to be a little bit too dicey. So I'm tepid. I'm tepid with Crawford this year after being in last year.
So can I call it, the Tolkien share the Hobbit? Because yes, it's your share of Tolkien.
I said token share, but sure,
I know. I'll go with it. You definitely said token. I just said Tolkien.
Crawford will be my Hobbit. Yes.
You're your Hobbit. Cause you just got one.
Precious.
You know the story. You're never going to really read it because you just want to say like, I have it. See, it's over there on my bookshelf.
It's there. I read that.
But you're not going to be like,
don't ask me details about it.
Read this. You're like, no, I know the story, whatever it is.
Yeah, no, because we do know the story. Home runs, they're a big problem with Crawford. And unless we see something that changes that, it is going to be really tough. He's a better deeper league play where even a low fours ERA might help you, because the 1.12 whip is still good. And there is room for guys that have the elevated ERA with the good whip. And he's done that the last 2 years, 404, 436 on the ERA totals, 111, 112 on the whips. That's a good whip. But how much can you take the ERA hit? That's going to be more league dependent.
Yeah, Jason Collette just said Cutter just gave up two more home runs during that segment.
He absolutely did. And you know, he shouldn't even be pitching right now, and he's just giving up bombs left and right. Let's stay in the AL East and go back to Kikuchi's old stomping grounds, Toronto, and talk about Mr. Bowden Francis, the BABIP god. I think this one is pretty straightforward. As I hinted there with the BABIP, that was the key driver there. 211 BABIP led to a 195 average against. He also had a 1.5 homer nine. But when you don't give up any hits, you don't give up too many walks, you can still put up a 330 ERA and an 093 whip. I'm always reluctant to take somebody's really good BABIP and just say, oh, he was lucky, he can't do it again. Because I think it takes, you know, away from the player, as if they didn't do anything to garner that. At the same time, 211 is really difficult to repeat. I would certainly never project anybody for a 211 BABIP. I wouldn't even project Peak DeGrom for a 211 BABIP, because it's just really difficult. So where do we go from here? It's a decent but not overpowering 17% strikeout minus walk. Like I said, the home run rate is bad, outright bad. So it really was the BABIP doing so much of the heavy lifting. Where does the 29-year-old Bowden Francis go from here?
Yeah, so I'm going to show you guys something really quickly here. I'm going to show you the player page, okay? And this is what we're going to do. This is wild to me. So this is Bowden Francis' player page. You can go down. Yeah, that's Jay Crumpler. Exactly right. this is the repertoire section. We can sort it by righty, lefty, all that stuff. Fine. But the problem with this is because Bowden Francis in the first half is way different in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
So the numbers that I'm going to would quote here don't really do him justice. So how do I get that? Well, guess what? We have this glorious game log. Okay. Yeah, if you actually didn't know, you hit all here and you actually get my little like SP blurbs that I write about every single game.
I remember when that first came on the site.
Yeah. It's insane. I've been trying to get that for like so long, and we've got it all done. Now we also have IVB per start and everything inside of here. If you didn't know, it's an extension. But anyway, what you can do is we can look at this and say, by the way, Bolds are when he started. So, okay, cool. He came back. Let's say the stretch started here. Okay, let's just do this on the 7th of when right here. So we go like this, August 7th, and we go to the end of the year, and then I say, all right, I want to see his four seamer, and now we have a date range for individual pitches. And what's so nuts is that during this stretch, if you can see this, 26% ICR for this four seamer in this stretch from the 7th to the 24th across these nine starts. And that's bonkers to me. I don't understand. The splitter, I mean, 31% ICR, but 58% strike rate. Like, this isn't that good. 12% swing strike rate. I mean, 23% put away rate in that time for the splitter. Fine. What about his curveball? 40% ICR, like 60% strike rate. Not really that good. Slider, 56% strike rate. Like, what are we seeing here that's interesting? Oh, maybe this sinker, I guess it was against righties. It was thrown 9% of the time. No, it's just this stupid four seamer.
This amazing four seamer out of nowhere, just dominating.
Like, I don't get it. And they said, well, must have really good shape. Well, let's look at the game. Let's go to stuff. It's steep or really average. It's 16 to 17 inches of vert. Fine. 6.8, which is above average. Good, but it's not like 7.2. And it's at 92. And like, you can even look at the individual pitches and say, like, what was this one? This is a strike looking. Thanks, Danny Jansen. You know, fly out down the middle by Tristan Casas, you know, 2-1 count. Like, how did this happen?
I
don't know. And when I don't know, I just, you know, this might be selfish. I might just, maybe I should just trust the numbers of it and say, whatever, you did this at 79% strike rate and only had this kind of outcome. 106 BABIP, by the way. What? When it's weird, I just say, nah.
Yeah.
I don't like weird. If I don't understand it, I just don't do it. You know,
if you can't make sense of it, it sets up to be a headache managing it. Right. And we talk a lot about like draft and play to your management style. And if you don't want to deal with potential headaches like this, this could definitely be a hipster type guy, headache inducing pitcher, stifling the entire roster. Bang, nailed it. I really could see some ups and downs here that just make it really difficult to kind of figure out what you want to do with Francis. He's not some young buck. He's 29 years old. He's running this good fastball, but it's not even overpowering from a velo standpoint. It just kind of gets the job done, but I don't have enough to put into it. I don't get it.
How does this work? How does this work? Look at these. Magic. These are, this is good.
Magic.
And really at the end of the day, what I'm staring at here is, you know, we've said before, like, oh, small sample size, but is it going to stick, right? Mm-hmm. That's a constant thing. And there are two arguments to that. One, of small sample size, you can see, like, well, the luck, 99% left on base during this run for him, 153 ERA, 0.5 whip, okay? You see the ICR this low, but BABIP, like the hotel is saying, okay, this is the small sample size luck. Okay, there's the results, but it's more about, like, is the small sample size of the skills going to stick?
Right.
And that's the argument that I often say, I think so, because these are skills that have been learned and will stick. But what are the skills?
A good
fastball.
I don't know. A middling fastball that he made amazing for a 2-month run.
How is it amazing?
It didn't make sense when it was happening. It doesn't make sense upon further review. And honestly, I've been saying, you know, how these other guys didn't really get overpriced in the market. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that a 63rd SP off the board, pick 231, is like egregious for Francis, but it's way more than I want to pay. I think I can name 10, 12 guys off the top of my head that I'd rather go for than Francis going in that same range. I just don't see how I get there this year.
I'm done. And I think he's the most talked about pitcher this conference. And I think, guys, I prefer Bates. Okay. Then Bowden. That is a wonderful Northeast College joke. All right. I just wish there was a pitcher named Bates.
Your audience for your jokes have an audience of three, and I love it.
Oh, God. All right. So Bowden Francis. Oh, no. What have I done?
We're not
for me. But you're in on Ronel Blanco, though.
Yes. Let's talk Ronel Blanco, because this is a guy, and you talk about, you know, throwing the no-hitter, which obviously got a lot of attention. This guy is just really difficult to square up. And he showed that throughout the year. So he ran a great BABIP too at 221 that I wouldn't necessarily pencil him in for again. But I do see him as somebody who is remarkably difficult for the opposition to square up. And part of that with his, like, with his somewhat sketchy control at times, 10% walk rate, career 11%. Is a little bit by design. It's part of what makes him difficult to square up. Kind of what you were talking about with Luis Gil, where he has the walk rate because he's not always in the zone, but that makes him difficult to square up a lot. And we saw consistent ability to limit hits from Ronel Blanco. It wasn't just the no-no. He led baseball with a 6-1 hits per nine. And I think there was some viability to that. And I think that he's going to get another opportunity this year, you know, 31 years old. So he's not some baby, but he's going to be in that rotation this year. And as we said earlier with Kikuchi, we like guys that are in Houston. We think that they have a good shot at getting guys on track if things are going south. So I'm really eager to see what the next step is here for Blanco, because again, he's not a baby, 31 years old, but breakout season here, based mostly on the good BABIP. I'll take a 25% K rate. I think this can work. I'm not planning for a 280 ERA. In fact, I'll probably tack a whole run onto it. But if I can get like a 380 ERA with like a 115 to 117 type whip, I think that's fine at his price point.
Yeah, I would say that when it comes to BABIP, one of the really great stats that we have here at Pitcherless is called hit luck, where mm-hmm. we are able to say, okay, based on the pitches that he threw, did he get more or less or fewer, really, hits than expected? And just to test this out, by the way, yes, the average is zero. So we're cool, guys. Or maybe it's a -1 or +1, but like, yeah, it's there. He had a -17. That is, he allowed 17 fewer hits than his pitches dictated that he should have. Now, that is looking at the pitches more in a vacuum than it is all-encompassing as an arsenal. So it isn't quite as precise as we might want to say. That said, it does give a good understanding that Ronel Blanco, with what he does, is It's solid. It is a four-seamer that surprisingly has a low mistake rate against lefties because he doesn't really give in with it. And that's why the walk rate is as high as it is, because he kind of does the Blake Snell thing.
I was just about to ask you that.
Not going to throw strikes with my four-seamer a ton. 60% strike rate against lefties, which is kind of cool. And he relies on his slider instead to get more strikes. In fact, against lefties and righties, the four-seamer has a lower strike rate than his slider. And that slider is fantastic. A 23% swing strike rate against right-handers and effective against lefties, not as effective. And that really puts the burden on the changeup for Ronel Blanco to get out lefties. That was a pitch that fell off a little bit as the season went on. That is the main concern that I have. Does Ronel Blanco have his changeup or not against left-handers? Because really, that was a difference from Ronel Blanco in 2023 versus 2024, the merging changeup as a starter. I love it when it works. I don't know if it's going to be there. I would love to have Ronel Blanco on my teams because out of the gate, I'll know, is this someone who has that changeup or not? Are the Astros going to continue to rely on him? Because really, they have all these guys on the shelf right now.
Yes, they do. And
they need those innings early in the season. I do prefer Spencer Arrighetti than Ronel Blanco. I actually put him in the same bucket as Luis Gil. In that 45-50 range, yep. Something around there. I have both of those against over Kikuchi, for example. I'm just trying to put some reference points there.
I've got them two slots apart, so I'm right there with you on Heel and Blanco.
Who do you want more?
Heel, barely.
I think I want Arrighetti, the pasta pirate.
Excuse me. I have Heel, Arrighetti, Blanco. I was saying Heel and Blanco, but Arrighetti's in between them. It's still Heel, barely, though. Heel, barely for me.
Last night, Potholzer Mike, one of our good friends, said he wouldn't even pay a dollar for Blanco. I assume it's based on the 221 BABIP that really? He's worried about an 84% left on base rate. Totally understand.
There's some fair concerns there, but man, I don't know. I think he's got it kind of, and I know that's nebulous. You don't want to bet too much on that in fantasy of like an it factor, but watching that guy consistently, Here in Texas, I signed up for the Fubo thing so I could actually watch the Astros for the first time.
Not
in
an
years.
Ad, guys.
Not an ad. They're okay, but not an ad. But I can actually watch the Astros straight up for the first time in several years because you used to have to have like AT&T or some garbage. It was ridiculous. But anyway, I watched a lot of Astros games, watched a lot of Blanco, and was just really, really impressed with what he was able to do. But I agree with you about the early decisions. You know, you always talk about that with kind of your second half of your rotation. Have guys that are going to create early, easy decisions on whether or not you want to hold or cut. And I do think if things come out of the gate ugly with Blanco, you can move on. And it doesn't mean that he won't get going again in the summer and maybe make you look a little bad with it, but that's okay. You can't be worried about everybody that rebounds after you cut them. You have to make the decision for the guy that's popping off right now. So if a guy comes up off the prospect list as the big free agent of the week and Blanco has a 5.2 ERA through his first five starts, boom. Off he goes, and the new guy comes on, and you go from there. I think it will be an early, easy decision with Blanco. I lean toward quality, though. I think he's still going to be pretty good, and like I said, I have faith in Houston that they're going to be able to get the most out of him. And I do want to point out that even if he gave him all 17 of those hits, the hit luck said he had 17 hits that didn't go for hits, he would go from 6.1 to 7.0 hits per nine, which would move him from first to sixth. So he still would have had an elite hit rate last year, even if he'd given up all of those hits. And I'm not saying that that's exactly how it works. I'm just saying that he was so good at hit suppression that even if all the favorable batted balls didn't go his way, he's still touting a wonderful hit rate. So I think there is a foundation here with Blanco that you can bet on. And again, price point, 243. That's just not a big ask for somebody like that.
You know, one of the things we really feel about is that we always feel as if it's better to hold on to a guy and then to drop him. It's like emotionally, it feels better.
Yes.
But the better thing for you is to drop a guy. It is so much better to drop a guy who rebounds than to hold someone who continues to hurt you. And whenever you're making these tough decisions, look, you can reflect on it that you dropped them and whatever. It's fine. For example, I was able to get Michael King after he was dropped. That happened to a guy. Fine. But you'll understand that that roster spot is now open. You can pick up something that will help you.
I quote him all the time. But Scott Pianowski says, if you never make a cut, you regret, you're being too tight.
Exactly.
You're just holding guys too long, and you're going through the slog of the badness, and then you're eventually cutting them too late. And that doesn't mean you cut your fifth rounder on April 15th. We're not saying that. But the back half of your roster becomes cuttable pretty early in the season if they're not performing, to go get somebody else, especially in a shallower league where the waiver pool is going to be deeper. Every league's different. Every situation is different. But generally, if you never regret a cut, you're either the best fantasy manager ever or you're entirely too tight with your guys. Yeah. The host is going to come in here and push us off real quick. So let me just get a passing thought from you on Tobias Myers. Big rookie year for the Brewers. Another organization that I generally trust. Doesn't have a lot of flashy metrics, but just got the job done for 138 innings. What does Tobias Myers do for an encore?
Yeah, so we actually have a little bit longer of time. We're going to give it a little bit of time back.
Okay, fantastic.
Missed it at the top before. So Tobias Myers, I think he's just not getting enough love, honestly.
Yeah. Completely overlooked.
Three pick 100, 300 is wild to me. And he's someone who has, believe this, 18 inches of vert on his four seamer.
Okay.
That's above average extension as well, 6.7, and slightly flat attacking a 1.1, which is not like 0.7 that you normally see from that higher IVB. It is Miller Park that slightly benefits vert, but it's still not enough for me to say like this isn't definitely an above average vert fastball, and it's at 93 miles per hour. What makes me more intrigued though is I think that this changeup is going to be something. I've watched it be executed properly and it's glorious. It looks like I'm going to say the thing. Get this. Okay, I'm going to say it. An Estrada changeup. It looks like an Estrada changeup. Okay.
And the team the team that Estrada started on, like, so the links are there.
No.
You love it.
Is that right?
Didn't Estrada start with Mom?
You're probably right here. I don't know. I just remember.
I'm fairly certain on that.
He technically
started with Washington. He threw 19 terrible innings for them, but he broke out with Milwaukee. So I was only partially correct.
Yeah, he only existed in Toronto to me. I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway. But Tobias Myers, and this is a pitch also that was like a 50% strike rate last year, right? Only 11% usage. I really think there can be a development with Myers is with changeup. And I really think that he is a guy who has multiple pitches. We have a cutter and curveball in there as well. I think the cutter can be continue to really be a successful pitch from a 33% ICR on the slider. I should mention the slider much more so than the curveball for Tobias Myers. The Brewers are going to let him go. And that was 1 year. We generally see command improve in the second year. And to see a 6% walk rate already, to see a guy who didn't really have a ton of mistakes with these pitches, I think there's more to be seen with Tobias Myers as a productive, potentially even quality start kind of guy, even though he had seven last year. I think that's just the Brewers being safe with him in his first year. I think he gets pushed a little bit more. And I wouldn't, I'm actually really surprised to see past 300 for 15 teamers because this is more of the mold of a quality start or really just a volume arm than a 12 team, 25 to 30% strikeout guy.
Right. This is the kind of guy you take in a deeper league because you like his floor more. Right,
exactly.
You're thinking that you're going to get a pretty solid foundation of 140 some innings, probably even more. I mean, he threw 138 last year. Reasonably, he should be pushing 160, 170 this year. And I agree that they kind of held him a little bit because they didn't want to overdo it. But now they can kind of push him up another level this year. I think Tobias Myers is going to be a key piece for them. And it comes back to organizational trust, too. There's certain organizations I do trust, and I like what Milwaukee does with pitching. And that gives me a little extra boost of interest in Tobias Myers, especially past pick 300, 327 ADP right now, 97th starter off the board. I don't know what people are doing. I know he's not super flashy, but you need stability and quality late in your draft there too. You don't always have to go for the upside with every single pick because, you know, if you take too many lottery tickets, then the five earned run outings that they give you on the way out are going to crush you. A steady guy every once in a while late in a deeper league can go a long way, and I like Tobias Myers to be that guy this year.
Thanks for listening to today's Fireside Chat with Paul Spohr and Nick Pollock. Follow both Paul and Nick on Twitter at Spohr and at PitcherList.